Greetings on this day of Odin.
Here we are. Here we are, once again, angry and ineffective. Not even very effective at showing the shirt.
Yeah, I don't have the shirt on today, but I'm going to wear it Friday.
Yep.
Morning, CK, and everyone else who's watching or listening. Yeah. So this is like the first of a two-part series that will end 2021, like for all real purpose. Like, yes, there's the holidays, but Friday is the end of the year when it comes to transmission, and that is more important than anything else going on in your little lives.
Yeah, so coming to the end for the year, and then, of course, who knows? I mean, maybe it's the end.
Morning from Winterpeg.
Is it wintry up there?
It's winterier.
Maybe. Winterier. I don't know. Do you guys have any snow yet, Bev? No, we'll see. But, because you're having some surgery. Yes, Bev says it is wintry up there. Cool.
You know, literally. When it's, you know, every time, because, you know, besides Alaska, which is an outlier, Minnesota is kind of pretty much maybe battles back and forth with North Dakota and Montana for the coldest ass state in the Union. And we always experience it worse than everyone else. And then anytime I feel like, which I'm a cold weather person, I actually like the cold, but if ever I get complaining, I'm like, well, at least it's not Winnipeg. So thank you, Bev, and everyone else in Winnipeg for making me feel a little bit better about the worst aspects of Minnesotan winters.
Yeah.
And Kathleen's.
Kathleen's in Kansas City. It's probably not winter down there. No. And so you've got a little bit of surgery coming up.
I've got
this taking a mini sabbatical, I'm calling it. It's because I'm from Minnesota. And so we could all use all your good vibes and thoughts and prayers and and so we're wrapping up for 2021, and we thought that we would try to go out on a high note, as high as we ever get, which is probably like, I don't know, low C or something.
it's still in the baritone range.
Yeah.
Which I've been thinking a lot about range, because like I'm doing vocal therapy to try to like feminize my voice, which is hard because it sounds fake. Mm. And I have a low speaking voice, and my singing voice is typically even lower. So the idea of a high baritone means for some of us, that's as good as we're going to get. So you should be grateful that we're not just living on the bottom all the time with this show.
But, yeah, so we started this many, many years ago.
Remember the beginning of the pandemic? Those times were so cute. We just needed to wash our hands a lot. Remember the wash the hand, like while you
wash the hand.
It was a charming time.
Yeah, yeah, barely. You know, it's funny. I was watching, what show were we watching that has the beginning of the pandemic? Oh, I think it's The Morning Show. I don't know if you've seen that. It's on
Apple TV.
Yeah.
Caught up. But yeah, we watched last season, and it's a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like it's trying too hard to be West Wing-ish to me. Like, but whatever.
Yeah. It's getting very soap opery. Anyway, the next season begins the pandemic, and it is actually sort of fun to hear like the news report. You know, there's 27 cases in the whole United States of COVID. It's like, oh, right. Yeah, I remember like that. There were a couple cases here and there. We didn't know what's going on. You know, now we've got 75,000 new cases a day. And we're like, hey, we're doing great. the pandemic's over. So anyway, we began this back in those days at some point, because we just thought, hey, things are getting really weird and different, and we want to talk about that and kind of chronicle that as we go along. And so we've been doing that for
what's being revealed. What's this apocalyptic moment showing us about society? And
And so we've been doing that for 245 episodes, which is pretty wild. I mean, for a couple of ineffective people like us.
Angry and ineffective.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I'm so angry that it's hard for me to type. So like being able to write out these little descriptions and use Photoshop to make little images through my shivering rage.
Through your rage.
My fingers, I need to hold them still, but I cannot. Such is my rage.
And so now here we are at this stage, and I will have to say, you know, if you were, you know, people do those word charts, like what's the most popular word, and the bigger popular words are bigger, and the other words are smaller.
Yeah, people do those all the time. All they're not as trendy, but everyone certainly see one on social media pop up.
Yeah. So I would have to say at this point, if I think about the conversations that I've had over the last few weeks, the biggest word in the word chart would be tired. Like that would be the biggest word. I have to say, when I talk to people, that's the word that I hear the most. Like everybody is tired. People are worn out from having to be adaptable. CK uses that word, adaptability. People are tired from having to be adaptable. People are tired of other people. People are tired of bad behavior, right? I just, you know, I was reading a whole bunch of stuff this morning about bad behavior that teachers endure, bad behavior that, you know, people in the service industry are enduring. Right. CK is word is fuck. Yeah.
No, and that's, you know, that's a fair point, because fuck can be like an angry word.
Fuck.
Yeah. Or you could be a tiger like
fuck.
So really, like it's an ever present, always word that can use it. You're very adaptable that way, CK. I've always appreciated that about you.
It's all in the emphasis of the syllable, right?
What fuck has this one syllable, so like how do you
but it's how you emphasize
because it, like, treat it like a tonal language word,
right? there are 27 tones of fuck.
It's like the Inuit word for snow. Like I don't know if that's true or if it's folktale. Like do they have 27 words, 27 inflections of fuck? That's fuck. The name of your next book, Dan. Actually, you and CK should co-write it.
There we go. Yeah.
Maybe CK could write it by himself because he's an expert in the word fuck.
I think he could. He could. And and so we really, it seems like, have gotten to this point. Of course, we're trudging onward, but we've gotten to this point where there is this sense of like being in the ashes, right? I mean, there's just this exhaustion and overwhelmness and, you know, what disaster is going to strike next and what wacko conspiracy theory or, crazy political stunt or whatever. And there's just a sense of tiredness. And, but then at the same time, right, there are all these interesting energies of kind of resilience and newness that may be really tiny compared to all of the, the big cluster fucks. But that we definitely see going on, and some interesting creative things. And so it's like, even in the midst of being tired, you know, people still, not everybody certainly, but numbers of people are still finding ways to engage life in kind of different, fascinating ways. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and you know, this, there's lots of angles we can take on this. Here's a comment from Tyler. I like that people are tired of their crappy jobs and terrible managers and are finally standing up and quitting. This is a good movement for worker empowerment. Right. And this is the thing, like the weariness, the mediocrity, the disappointment, the frustrations, the rage, like all these different negative reactions to experiences we've had the last couple of years are all disruptive enough to, it gives, opens the window for possible new things. And this is the thing, like, you know, few people would ever accuse us of having toxic positivity. So there's a naive way of like just being wishful thinking. But to me, like my hopefulness is that it, there's disruption, and I'm reminded of things like, you know, like you said, I think things start small. It's just little things like, you know, there, we're at the end of history in some very key ways when it comes to climate crises. And so we don't know how bad things are going to get. And things are very disruptive. So in some ways, things are new. Like there might be something new under the sun these days. But in a lot of ways, this isn't all that different in terms of the hopelessness of like if you are a like living in Palestine during Rome. Right. So Rome dominated for 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. And Jesus came on board in the middle of it, like early on. Like Jesus wasn't that far after Caesar. Rome was an empire for a long time, mostly after Jesus, right? But still, like in that moment of like, well, is there any real hope for us to ever have? He said, you know, faith is like a mustard seed. The kingdom of God is here. The kingdom of God is amongst you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the thing now, like, okay, things are grim, and there's like, I don't want to like poo-poo the seriousness of our different crises, but there is hope. There's little things happening, and any of them can be like a mustard seed that grows into something important. So we need to be, instead of being foolishly optimistic about it, we should be giving our attention to those little signs, and so that we can nurture and encourage and support and lean in without any sort of illusion that somehow like, well, it'll all work out.
Right. Yeah. And the exhaustion and the, you know, everything being burnt down, so to speak, you know, reminds me of the whole thing in addiction work where people talk about, well, you know, you got to hit bottom. And then at that point, you can kind of begin to crawl back up or out. And so, yeah, and as you said, there's all these little things, and we can start to give our attention to them. And of course, some of them aren't going to go anywhere, you know, and but then some of them will start to go somewhere. and, you know, and I'm thinking a lot in this about our spiritual direction program and the cohort that we've got with that. I mean, every one of these 20 or so people are really, you know, either doing or thinking about or being in the world in really interesting new kinds of ways.
Yeah, they're not normie.
Yeah,
Christians. They're all exploring some sort of prophetic edge at some level.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and there's all kinds of challenges, and some of them are in very traditional settings. Some of them are in very non-traditional settings. And, you know, they're all tired. they've all got a lot going on. But there really is also a lot of space for creativity happening. And so I think that's part of, you know, it's almost like the burning down of everything is like this decluttering, right? You know, instead of doing the condo thing of like actually, you know, looking at everything and saying, does this give me joy? It's like, no, your whole house just burns down, right? So now you don't even have to spend any time worrying about whether or not something gives you joy. You know, it's just everything's gone. And so there's this massive decluttering, and now you can begin to go, oh, like what kind of fun, you know, what kind of fun little things? Like here's some weird little molten piece of metal from the fire, and here's this other little twig that's still left. Like, I can put them together and make a new kind of robot bird, and it'll be really cool. We got some more comments.
Yeah, and this is CK writes, so can we as a society turn this around, or is this a new birth of the individual to become more? There is a definite shift happening. I mean, this is the thing. Like, let's talk about some of the shifts we've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And before going into the content, just to give people a sense, like, I mean, little things like, you've noticed this. You pointed this out to me, that you've noticed a number of your assigned masculine at birth friends or acquaintances transitioning. Like, mm-hmm. So I'm an example of this. And I think in my mind, this is very not that dissimilar from people quitting their jobs. People are realizing mm-hmm. what isn't. There's something about this pandemic wherein people are noticing things that are not working for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a certain amount of pessimism to have that kind of perspective, because like people in bad relationships will often keep going because they think that if they can get to this point where they plateau and take a breather, then all their patience with Henry, who's an alcoholic, will then take the relationship to the next level. And so it creates this codependent cycle. So like people, when things are not that bad, will think, well, you know, it's not that bad. I'll just keep working at it. And things have to get bad enough, or at least disrupted enough, where you need some alone time apart from Henry mm-hmm. or whatever, to start noticing like, do I really want that? And so the pandemic has offered that for a lot of people with work, with marriages. I would imagine breakups and divorces increased. People dropping out of things increased,
mm-hmm.
for sure. We know that work. And then people transitioning or leaving the church. Those might seem like negativities to a lot of people, but those are all doors being opened to possibility. And I think that's really encouraging. And then there's other things. Yeah. Like, I just bought this book, which I'm actually astonished. Like, if you told me 10 years ago that David Graeber
would be dead and still writing books.
No one knew. I mean, people in the Occupy movement, when the Occupy movement hit, started to know who David Graeber was. But before that, you had to be an anarchist to know who David Graeber was, pretty much. And so if you told me that David Graeber, beyond the grave, would be writing a book that challenges our assumptions about how civilization is developed, and that it'd be reviewed by the New York Times, like all these different major sources, as an important, significant book, that would have astonished me. I wouldn't have believed you, but that's what's happening. And it's important because one, anarchist sorts of thinking are becoming, since Black Lives Matter and things, and the police abolition movement, people are starting to be open to that, although we had a major loss in the Twin Cities electorally recently.
Mm-hmm.
But that also, like, this book, the premise is that there isn't this obvious development. There have always been varieties of hierarchy and oppression within any stage of development. We don't know exactly why things seem to be locked in the way they are now, but things don't have to be this way. There's not a foregone conclusion about how societies develop. And for that book to come out at a time like this is an astonishingly well-timed thing. So there's all these little signs of hope. Things don't have to be this way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to me, CK, to get sort of to your question, when you say, as a society, turn this around, there isn't one thing that's society, you know? And I think that in many ways, part of the latest oppression, right, this capitalist, imperialist oppression, is that this idea that there's one thing. Right? And so that's, you know, white supremacy. There's one thing. Jesus is the only way. That's one thing. You know, America is one thing. I think we know that that's not true, that there's many, many things. Right. And, you know, Ash, you mentioned the Roman Empire, right? And so, you know, the Roman Empire is like one thing. There's the emperor, kind of a statue of the emperor on every corner kind of thing that you bow down to and throw a little money in the box there. But then you have all these other weird little things happening all over the place that are seeds for something that comes later. And so
what Christianity was.
Yeah, well, that's what Christianity was. And so, you know, I think that probably many of the major institutions are not going to turn around. And you know, one of the signs of hope that I was going to lift up that I think is a great example of what's going on here, right, is what's happening with the American church. I mean, the American church, you know, we've been reading these articles about the church is tanking for literally probably 40 years. Like,
yeah, my entire almost, life.
Yeah, almost the exact same article. Like you could pull an article from the Alban Institute from, you know, 1990 and some article that just came out last week and they'd be the same article basically. And you know, to your point about how we keep going when things are kind of okay, you know, most of these things have been ignored by the institution and the institution has done very little to change despite, you know, things like the Lilly Endowment putting, you know, billions of dollars into turning the church around kinds of programs, all of which have been, you know, ineffective, maybe not angry, but pretty ineffective. And now the pandemic is just falling off a cliff. And, you know, people are not coming back to church. I mean, the attendance thing has disappeared. The people who are left are more and more pissed. You know, pastors are burning, crashing left and right, leaving the ministry. But then also talking about, all right, so now if we're in the ashes of this thing, what do we do differently? Right? What do we do differently? And so I think it's a new birth, not just of individuals, but also of little groups and communities and clusters, you know, big and smallish, that are going to do new things. And I think the election in Minneapolis here is a great example, right? I mean, this major change of public safety amendment lost. However, there are thousands of people who not only voted for it, but are going to continue to organize and think about and talk about what is a different way to do public safety. If you look at the Minneapolis public schools, which, you know, the learning gap and divide between white and black students is horrendous, and it's the worst in the country. And it is very clear that people have gotten to the point where they are like, this is just completely unacceptable. And, you know, we may be seeing a major strike here in the next few weeks. We may, but more and more people are really rallying to do something different. So I think that within all of these institutions that are tanking, you are then also getting pockets of resistance and creative thinking.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand that our spiritual direction program is not the be-all and all biggest thing in the world, but it is still astonishing to me. Like, I'm still surprised, and Dan and I talk about this all the time. Most spiritual direction programs in the country are struggling. And so we just, Dan and I are not well known, and we just started this program, and we had to close off new applications months at a time and start turning people away. And the only reason that is, or the primary reason as far as I think, is because we were like, okay, let's not do this regular contemplative bullshit thing that assumes that you're individuals who need to do these practices with other individuals. Let's talk about social oppression and center that as the framework. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much, I mean, as far as I can tell, that's it. Like, maybe the way that we approach it attracted people, or the fact that we have some legitimacy in living in that gap, but still it shows that people are not interested in just doing the same old thing. And right. And you know, there's this, the idea, it's bizarre, like even if you read scriptures, there's no way in hell that you'd come away with it like, you know what we should do for 2,000 years, let's have a lecture with singing in front of it and that'll transform the world.
I like that. A lecture with singing in front of it.
Like, that's really, I know that liturgy is more complicated. There's these traditions. But that's our takeaway for 2,000 years. Like, let's double and triple down on that. And like, when the pandemic hits, you know, we need to figure out how to use Zoom. To have singing followed by a lecture.
Singing followed by a lecture.
As our first fucking instinct about what's the most important thing that we do as the church.
All right, we got to get to our comments.
Ellen writes, hello, joined just in time to hear you two say nice things about us students.
That's right.
Yeah,
students.
Good thing you
awesome.
Didn't tune in earlier when we were saying all the bad things. Catherine writes, a Norwegian friend once told me you can't say it will be okay in the language, only it will probably go okay enough. Which I still think about.
That's not only very Norwegian, but very Minnesotan. North.
I mean,
Dakota,
you can see the Minnesota, right? The Norwegian, Scandinavian. That's right. White
exactly. Where you know they don't say it's good. They say, well, it could always be worse.
By the way, Dan, do you know why the Norwegian Navy puts barcodes on their ships?
No.
It's so they can Scandinavian.
That's really painful.
CK writes, it feels like the concept of the bottom keeps reaching new levels. Meta bottoms.
Meta bottoms.
Isn't Facebook called Meta now? So like, it makes sense that there'd be we're all meta bottoms because we're being fucked by Facebook.
Yeah. Anyways. Well, and you know, and that is true. And you know, this is the reality of suffering can always be somewhat worse is sadly very much the case.
Yeah. Kathleen writes, I recently watched David Byrne's Utopia.
Great movie.
I haven't seen it. Oh, I was moved by the song Burning Down the House. In a new way, it sounded surprisingly hopeful. Interesting.
Right. No.
I love the Talking Heads and David Byrne.
Yes.
Ellen writes, Henry is such a great code name for ultimate oppression. Sorry to anyone who's named Henry. Yeah, I don't know. There's something about Henry that Hank. CK writes, having experienced homelessness, I learned how to be adaptable and survive, and how now having a new life and love, I look around and it seems like everyone is experiencing that level of having to adapt and survive.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, adaptability and survival is definitely a hallmark of ecological systems. And so,
Ashiel writes, yeah, seeds and creativity. Seymour writes, the other thing about abuse addiction is that not only is the situation dynamic not bad enough to wake us up or whatever, but that just enough good happens to keep us hanging on to our illusions. I mean, that's the trick. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always part of one of the things I've noticed, and this is accelerated because of the pandemic, you know, we have this healthcare system that's shit. And so now, let's just say autism, ADHD, transitioning, any sort of medical thing that's kind of like it's hard to get good care about. Now there's a plethora of competing online places where they can do assessments and hook up prescriptions, and you pay a flat monthly rate. And so it's cheaper than paying out of pocket at a regular doctor, and it's easier. But you can't use your insurance. And so like in some ways, this is the Uberification of the medical industry. And so you could be tricked into thinking, well, to me, that's like, wow, that's great. It's convenient. This is an innovation. You might think that's a good thing, but like systemically, it's a trend towards bad thing when it comes to the ownership and how it works. And so this is where we get tricked into like these little good things that kind of give us some more sense of choice and autonomy. And we're like, it takes some of the pressure off, keeps us lulled into thinking, well, maybe things are getting better. Angelique, don't forget the offering.
That's
right.
A lecture with some songs in front of it and in between there's The Offering.
Well, and to me, the best placement for The Offering is two-thirds or three-quarters of the way into the singing. People are all emotionally juiced up, and then you can kind of do special music while the, you know, and if I was ever going to start a church where I did offerings, like in the service, those plates, no way. I love those churches that have those little weird net, velvet net bag things where they have like the wooden pole.
Right. Yeah.
I love those things. It's like, yeah, catch it.
Well, I remember this friend of mine that said that he grew up in the Armenian Orthodox Church, and he was like, during the service, they'd pass the offering plates like five times. he said they keep coming around, you know, in between the bells and whistles, and they had the smoke and all the stuff in this Orthodox church. He said I was a kid, and like every time I turned around, you know, the offering plate was coming back. So, yeah. All right, a few more comments.
Seymour says, not to mention actual addiction and actual abuse are things we're all experiencing under white supremacist, colonialist, imperialist capitalism. Yes.
Yeah, so we're used to it. We're used to it. And, you know, and I do think that that's something about this pandemic and some of what's going on. And I think that, you know, Tyler lifted up that one example, or the church thing, is that, you know, there is the famous straw that breaks the camel's back, right? That at a certain point, you just, yeah, you can't take it anymore.
Or some people, and there's always people that never get to the point where they say, I can't take it anymore.
Right.
It's the tragic thing. Ellen writes, Meta Bottoms, not next great grunge punk band.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Kathleen writes, I keep thinking about the concept of resilience. The pandemic revealed my own resilience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think that's then where these little things start to happen. And and we find, you know, we may be tired and hanging and spacing out and just getting by and doing whatever we can barely do. But then there's suddenly a moment. Like, oh, but now I'm going to do this cool little thing, or now this thing's going to happen, or now I'm starting to move in this direction. And, yep.
Kathleen writes, oh, geez, the Good RX pharmacy ads that star a struggling single mom relieved that her bill for meds is a little lower are dystopian as fuck. Yeah. They are.
Yeah.
It's really discouraging. I know, right? So Hillsong has mastered this. This is you know what's astonishing? Yesterday, I was doing some recording for something with my friend Oren, and we were listening to contemporary Christian music, just because I do that sometimes, as you know, Dan. And I decided to look up the best, like what the Christians think of as the best Christian songs of all time, and there's different lists. As I was looking over these lists, and I found a page of the best-selling Christian albums of all time.
Okay.
The astonishing thing was most of the top 10 were Hillsong albums, which is just discouraging.
Yeah, well, contemporary Christian music in general is pretty discouraging.
No, but there's, within the range of possibilities, Hillsong is like, let's just have our worship song, music that's manipulative and kind of Nashville-y, and let's, what we'll do is just record that and sell albums of that and make millions and millions of dollars. That's bizarre to me. CK writes, be well, there is love out there, I'm living proof.
You also, CK, love your latest photo. CK is like the hippest looking dude. He's like sort of this cool combination of some awesome jazz musician and, you know, funk crazy genius. And I don't know.
Yeah, the way you look looks like somebody who has a secret recording studio in a subterranean compound that's gigantic. And you've got like 30 different
along with a swimming pool and a
bowling alley.
Yeah.
Because that'd be in there too, for some reason. It's just somehow in that. visage that you have. Cheryl writes, are we not churching now, tuning into you? I mean, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Like, what does it mean to church?
Yeah, well, and a number of people have said that this has been their pandemic church. And I do think that, you know, transmission is an example of a creative thing that happened, and the pandemic provided space for that, or the space that the pandemic created. This was something that could jump in there, and it certainly has been great and tons of fun.
Well, and to be fair, we do have music, and then we do talk after the music comes. So.
Yeah, but we don't have an offering, which has always been
at the end. We take an offering and we'll close. It's just not really something that happens very much.
Yeah, we never made the $12 million goal.
No offering.
Right. We never made our.
But Hillsong has completely Walmartized whatever remaining hope of art there is or was left. Luckily, Hillsong's dirty laundry is gradually coming out. Yeah.
Yes. So, all right. Well, this was great. Thanks for all the comments. We will be back on Friday for a hopeful Fascism Friday, which seems like a total oxymoron impossibility.
We'll have to figure it out.
But if anybody can pull it off, we can. I'm convinced.
Yep. We'll see you Friday. And then after that, see you in 2022. Yep. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
Bye.